Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Devon Taylor. Devon Taylor is an accomplished American novelist and entrepreneur specializing in business relations. As a burgeoning author, he debuted with the enchanting children's fantasy novel, Icarus Finds His Power. His latest work, Trajectory, Volume 1, is an inspiring collection featuring 17 authors from diverse backgrounds who share their powerful stories of trials, tribulations, and life-changing advice. In this volume, Taylor tells his personal journey of becoming a parent overnight and the struggles that accompanied this profound transformation, offering a unique perspective on overcoming adversity. In addition to his literary pursuits, Taylor is a sought-after keynote speaker and the host of the Devon Taylor Podcast, a platform dedicated to showcasing remarkable stories and diverse voices from across the globe. Residing in the Inland Empire within Riverside County, Taylor shares his life with his four cherished adopted children, Olivia, age 16, Damon, age 12, Tina, age 8, and Noah, age 7. Their bustling household also includes 6 dogs, 3 cats, and a lively array of relatives. Devon, it sounds like there's never a dull moment in your household.
Let's just say I have a lot on my plate. I've got a full plate over here.
It sounds that. Welcome to the podcast. Your story just intrigued me, and I'm just glad we were able to have you come on the podcast. And I know our listeners are going to benefit from your story and, you know, what you've done to overcome adversity and everything. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Me too.
Oh, you're welcome. My first question for you is, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Yeah, that's such a loaded question because I feel like there are so many experiences that have kind of helped shape who I am today, who I'm becoming. I would say, you know, the moments that stick out to me, I guess what I would say is, you know, joining the volleyball team for the first time when I was in high school. That was a big life changer for me because it led me on the trajectory of what I thought would be my life purpose for a really long time. So joining volleyball for the first time was really pivotal for me and something that was new to my family. My brother was the only one who really played a sport competitively. He played basketball. And before he died, one of the things that he told me was to find a sport and to stick with it. And that was kind of like the last real conversation I had with him. For whatever reason, that really stuck in my head through high school and even through college. I just tried to stick with volleyball so much that I cared more about it than my classes. But it ended up working out for the best because it led me into the job at Long Beach City, where I was the assistant coach and got so much exposure to the sport and just being able to help out the youth in a different way. Raising the kids has been something that's really been pivotal for me. And them coming into my life was something that was life-changing, obviously. You know, going from no kids to 4 kids would be life-changing for anyone. But I think it really helped define my life at a time where I thought I had it all figured out. And I think in life, we learn that we don't necessarily all have it figured out, but we learn things as we go. And I guess in that time of my life, I was going to learn how to become a parent. And so that really changed the trajectory of what I thought I was bringing to this world and what I could bring to this world. So I would say those two things come to mind immediately. Obviously, everything that I've done after, you know, creating the book, speaking on a stage, creating the podcast, just trying to do things for myself to, I guess, put my image out there, put my brand out there, because I think at the end of the day, we all want to leave some kind of mark. And that was, to me, the easiest thing to do was to write a book and something that felt authentic. So, yeah, I mean, those are just a few things that I've kind of helped shape my life. But I feel like in every area, or I guess every moment in your life, you're going to find yourself in certain stages. And depending on what you're going through in that moment, those will probably be the things that define it. And I have so many that it's hard to say, but I know everything is connected in some way, you know? And so I've tried to have a broader perspective on how those connections work and how they have gotten me through some of even the hard times in my life, and just being open to those connections and being open to what life can bring you, I think really helps with those different things that come in and kind of affect which way we can go. So, yeah, I mean, just, you know, life has its moments of just really like surprising you. And I never thought volleyball would lead into coaching at a college. And then from there, all of that experience coaching would help me be prepared to be a parent and so forth. So that's the way I would answer it. But I don't know if I got too far out there with all the connections in the spider web of life.
No, I think it's important that we honor those connections. And I think what your story also illustrates is the importance of looking at how our past experiences dictate what we do in the present, and how that helps us develop the skills that we need to do to either to become a parent or embrace some other calling that's going to help us find meaning. Can you speak to the connection between how your skills as a volleyball coach helped you become a parent who adopted four children?
They're very different, but there is a lot of similarities when it comes to just raising kids in any atmosphere, you know. And with the volleyball atmosphere, it was more so about just raising them, the kids in the sport, and ensuring that they got the proper teachings and the proper avenues in order to continue on with their volleyball endeavors, and coupling that with school. So that, you know, that was my way of giving to the community, and that way of just providing that kind of mentorship to the youth. And when I found out I was going to be taking in the kids, I just really fell back on a lot of the things that I had learned from my coaches, from people that were in the community that were helping raise us as kids when we were growing up and trying to figure out what we wanted to do with volleyball, with life, with our talent. And I just remember when I first got the kids, a lot of the people that had been around me with volleyball, there were people that were upset because I had to walk away from it. Essentially, it was a job that was an hour and a half away from my home, and I was going to be raising four kids. There's no way. And so I had to kind of career change. But as I was doing it, the support that I received from everyone, because they knew the gravity of taking in these kids, was immense. And so just even the community aspect of what I created around volleyball and the people that I was choosing to be around made such a vast difference when I was able to take them in, because I felt supported. And so I would just say, you know, when it comes to raising kids and what I've learned since then, because that was a completely new journey for me and I had no experience other than like babysitting, but you could always give those kids back, you know, these were mine. So it was a much different circumstance. But the one thing that I've learned is that no matter the circumstance, no matter, you know, the kids that you're raising, as long as you have an open heart and you communicate, a lot of the problems or a lot of the things that feel like you can't handle, that will kind of go away, because life doesn't, or God, whatever however you believe it, doesn't prepare you or doesn't put things in your way for you not to be prepared for it. I didn't realize it at the time, but volleyball played such a big role in just being able to For instance, like, you know, waking up early for a tournament and having to get myself ready, get my bag ready, get my water ready, get everything ready. It prepared me for my early mornings with my kids, getting them ready, preparing them, getting their hair brushed, making sure we've got everything, making sure we did our homework for the night before. So it was just like clockwork, but just in a different way, just switching the hit points that we would have to make all day with the kids versus what I was doing when I was playing volleyball. So I'm super grateful that I grew up in a community that really loved the sport, but also had respect for the sport. And with that respect, you just get taught certain things that you're able to pass on. And so I was able to pass that on to my kids, and now they're doing it themselves. And you know, I don't even have to wake up with them, and they're super independent. It took a little bit of time, but you know, once you have that discipline within you and you try to instill it in somebody else, it's much easier when you've gone through it yourself. So I guess that's the best way I could correlate the volleyball, raising the kids, and how that all worked out for me in the long run.
Yeah, there certainly is a lot of overlap, and particularly when you talked about, you know, having an open heart, being compassionate, creating an atmosphere where like your players would be comfortable coming to you about things, not only volleyball related, but life related.
Right.
And I think those values that you developed and an atmosphere that you created as a volleyball coach certainly carried over to raising your nieces and nephews, because you found yourself with a sudden community of children who needed you. And speaking of support, tell our listeners about the role that your mother played in how she supported you in your desire to raise your four nieces and nephews.
Yeah, my mom was right there. I mean, at the time, you know, my mom and my partner at the time, Giancarlo, were really big supports. They both made it easier in terms of just really being there. And so, like, you know, when we initially found out about the kids, I was freaking out. Like, I'm like, how are we going to do this? I've never been a parent before. You're about to be retired. Like, you know, speaking to my mom, my partner's never had a kid before. Like, I was freaking out, and I couldn't really wrap my head around it at first. And I remember her just really stopping me and saying, like, you have support. We got this. No matter what, we've got this. And just her cool, calm, and collected attitude kind of helped ease me. But then I had to bring it to Giancarlo and talk to him about that. Like, hey, I got four kids. Not sure how you feel about it. And his reaction was very similar. Like, we've got this. It's okay. And I think just knowing that they were going to be there to support no matter what was super important for me at that time, because it was a big transition. Like, I knew that I wouldn't be able to coach because somebody was going to have to stay. My mom, you know, worked across the cities now, and she was about to retire. So I didn't want her to, you know, lose out on her retirement. So there was just a lot that I had to personally weigh, but they were right there to support it. My mom was okay with me switching my jobs and understanding me having to stay back with the kids and just make sure that they're okay. Just really supported the idea and would really come in when I needed it, giving me breaks by, you know, watching the kids when it needed her to, and just being a good support. And Giancarlo the same. Like, they really made it easier for me to be the type of parent that I want to be, which is a little bit more focused on the kids and their growth and what they've been through and how we can help them get past that. They've got a lot of issues within themselves because of what they've gone through. So they needed a lot of patience from us. And honestly, they needed a lot of support at the beginning.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good. I was just going to say it's been a rewarding experience all the way around. And I'm grateful for the support that my mom and Giancarlo were able to give me in the beginning.
Yeah, particularly, you know, and it sounds like they came from a very unhealthy home situation. Mm-hmm. And when they come from an unhealthy home situation, it's stability. I think it's support. It's consistency. It's knowing that they're loved. We can show them that there are alternatives and help them for lack of a better term, buy into those alternatives, the chances of avoiding further problems, whether it's mental health issues or intimacy problems down the road, are going to be certainly lessened because of that.
I agree 100%. And that's why we want to be so, I want to be so involved, but at the same time, allow them to have that dichotomy of like making their own decisions. So I try to find like, you know, a fine balance between how I was raised and how I want them to be raised, and even asking for their opinions, you know, like, hey, like, what do you feel about this? How do you feel about how I reacted about this? You know, and just keeping that line of communication open with them, because the way I see it, they are our future, you know, and the more I can instill that in them, like, you're our future. You guys are going to be running things. I need you guys to be on top of running things, you know? So I just, the more I feel like I'm instilling that, the more I feel like I'm creating people that are going to be really active members of society versus just kind of allowing life to happen to them. And that was a big part of writing the book, showing them like you can create life and you can create the path that you'd like to see. It's just about doing it.
We are going to get to the book because I do want to talk about your book, Icarus Finds His Power. So we're going to get to that. But before I forget, I want to ask this question. For those families who are thinking about becoming foster parents or adopting children, what can they expect? And what skills do they need to possess to be effective foster parents or adoptive parents?
Best advice I can say is expect the unexpected. Foster kids or kids that have been in the system in general are there for a reason, meaning they've been through a lot. And there are things that may have happened to them that could really be damaging to not only their personnel, but their self-esteem and who they are and how they identify in this world. And one thing that I thought was, oh, everything looks so peachy clean on the outside. You know, they all look happy. They all look clean. You know, there could possibly be nothing wrong. And as we've been raising them, things have been coming up. They have a past, you know, that's uncontrollable because we weren't a part of it. When we initially first took them in, I expected to have my original nieces and nephews and not to have the problems that come with being put in the system. But yeah, we were kind of surprised about some of the things that have happened with the kids and just like their responses and their ability to be able to control their emotions, like, was really eye-opening because they were hurting. And so I would just say, you know, just there's so much patience needed, so much understanding needed, and really so much guidance needed when they're first coming into any home. And I think that's something that's not really considered when you're taking in a foster kid, is that fragility that comes with the kid. Mm-hmm. They're so impressionable, you know, and I had young kids when they came to me. So, you know, a lot of what they had been through, you know, just imagine being a young kid and seeing some tough things and then having to go from your home to a facility to, I mean, they knew me, but I wasn't like in their lives like that. I didn't really get along with their parents, so that's a long story. But, you know, just having to switch from being in a facility to being with me and just like, you know, the switches that come with it, you know, new school, new area, new rooms. There was just a lot of adjustments happening for them. And so I would just hope that people that are thinking about taking in foster kids would really consider just like the mental fragility that comes with it. If they've been through something hard or if they've been through something tough, because I don't think that's something that we talk about. When I think about foster care or taking in kids, I think about, you know, just the saving aspect and the hero aspect of it all. But there is a tough part about it, dealing with the kid and the mental aspects that they may be going through and what has affected them as they were in that previous home or even in the facility. So I think that was something that I didn't realize from the jump. And I wish I did, because I think I would have understood more. I think I would have been able to respond better in certain situations.
Well, and I think you bring up some valid points. It's not only the history that they bring from their family of origin, it's also their history in terms of past foster care experiences. And a lot of times, and we know, there's abuse in the foster care system. There are foster parents who don't show the love and stability needed for that child to begin to reengage in life productively. When they come into a home where there's all that love and support, like you showed your nieces and nephews, Devon, it takes time for them to really trust that this is going to be consistent, because there's a part of me that thinks, this is good now, but I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. When is it not going to be good? And the more we can model consistency and love and empowerment, it's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
But when they come around, it's going to be an enriching experience for both the foster parent or the adoptive parent and for those children who have come into that home.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about your book, Icarus Finds His Power. What is it about? Tell us a little bit about the myth of Icarus. Tell us about the book and what you hope readers will take away from reading it.
Absolutely. So when I wrote, well, I'll say we, because it was a family effort, and I'm super grateful that that was how we did it. Just a little backstory, how Icarus came about. I was thinking, really, I get into really thoughtful moments, and I was just really pondering on how I connect with the kids more. We weren't having really any issues, but I just wanted them. When I took in the kids, I took in the kids for like more than just taking them in to give them a home. Like, I wanted them to have a different life. And so with that being said, I was pondering one day, what can I do? And it instantly came to me after, you know, a long thought process of writing a book. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I should write a book. It was something that I knew was in me, something that I knew that I would wanted to always do. Like, I went to school to become a writer and never really finished that portion. I got my degree in something else. And I have always been around people that create, but I've never really found my creative passion. I started a podcast years ago with a friend, and then we didn't end up being friends, so I had to stop. It was always something around creating. And I finally was like, write a book. It just kept coming into my mind, write a book. So I finally sat down one day and I wrote down Icarus. The Smicarus is what it was originally called. It was a little rhyming children's book. And I just wanted to do something quick, something fast. And I brought it to the children and I just told them, like, hey, I want to write a book. You guys feel, you know, down for that? And they were all down for it. And so we made the process, and that was the beginning of Icarus. And so what it transformed into was a chapter book, a children's chapter book about a boy that grows up on a planet called Aurora. His mother is kind of like the goddess, god of the planet. She's basically come down to unite the entire community, village, and bring peace on the world, essentially. With that, obviously, when someone tries to bring peace, there's always someone that's opposing it. So that's where Nimrod comes in, who's the bad guy. Not to give too much away, between Nimrod and the light goddess, which is Icarus's mom, they kind of have a battle, which ends in some fatalities, leaves Icarus in a situation where he's got to figure it out. The idea of Icarus and his journey was he is on this journey of self-discovery as a newly foster. And so we're kind of pulling away from our situation with the kids and kind of bundling it into one character and taking him on a magical journey so that there's elements of fantasy in it, but also elements of real life. How he feels about being a foster, how he feels about losing his mom, how he feels about having to kind of navigate and figure out life on his own. And the people that come into his life help kind of shape his next steps. And so I just really wanted to take a story that would help tell the foster journey in a fantastical way where people can enjoy the story, but also feel it. And so that's kind of the story of Icarus in a nutshell. I know we were talking, I kind of want to mention this too. We were talking about like the whole idea of Icarus's name and where it came from. I do love Greek mythology. And so if you guys have ever heard of Icarus, the old Greek mythology story about how he flew too close to the sun, his father tried to warn him, and, you know, he built those wings and didn't listen to his father. He wanted to do it anyways, and he flew to the sun and killed himself. I wanted to take a spin on that idea, the idea of Icarus being pairing with that story. He's the son in my story, and his mom is who's connected to that son. And so instead of like him being too far away and dying, it's more so of him being so close that that's her love and she never wants to be too far away. And so the idea of him becoming a foster, like, will play into the idea of them pulling apart and what it does to their relationship, even over the books, because I'm planning to have a sequel and then one after that to kind of continue that story and tell what happens as that bond goes further and further away and what happens to each of them. So yeah, it's a lot of mystical fantasy elements that help bring the story together. But like I said, just based on real-time events and what I've been through, what the kids have been through, and how we've come together to not only become a stronger family, but become stronger beings in this world and truly find our purpose. So.
I think it sounds like a great story, and I hope many of my listeners choose to pick up on that, and particularly any other sequels you write to it, because it's almost, from a developmental perspective, it's a nice way to see how empowerment, how not buying into our limitations, but our potential, reaching for our dreams with the support and love of those caring individuals. It could be a microcosm for how we could make the world heaven on earth, our version of heaven on earth.
Absolutely.
In your TED Talk, Finding Your Power, you mentioned that Icarus is the embodiment of your inner child. Can you tell our listeners how so?
Well, so I think when I wrote Icarus, because like I said, it started off as a children's rhyming book and transformed into a chapter book. And when I went to the publisher, that was their idea to kind of flesh the characters out more. When I wrote Icarus, I wrote him, I guess, from the perspective of me and what I perceive to be all of the children's inner child. But I could only, you know, obviously I can only write from a perspective that is of mine and what I know. And so that's kind of why when I did the speech, it was really important for me to put that in there, because it's true. Icarus's thoughts, feelings, his patterns are all modeled after some of the things that I have said to myself in the past. I just did a recent interview and didn't realize that this interview was going to lead in this direction, but we started talking about my father and the past and how that's affected me. And I didn't realize how much of me not having a father in my life played out in the story of Icarus Finds His Power. Even though, you know, it's his mom that he loses, and in a different way, you know, I have had my mom my entire life. And so that played a big role in it. But not having a father, I think, did something to me and for me. There's no way that you cannot be affected by not having that father figure in the house. But also for me, because it's helped me bring this story to life and helped me kind of define who I am in this world. And if anything, find a community of people that have been through the same thing. So I really wrote Icarus from that perspective of just internalized loss that he really can't comprehend at the beginning of the book, but has to learn how to kind of deal with, because life goes on. And, you know, obviously we're put in the situation for a reason, to figure out who we are and how we're coming into our power. And, you know, it may have been something that needed to happen in order for us to really truly figure out our path. And so that's why I thought it was really, really important to not just tell the story of Icarus and how the impact of losing his mother changes his life, but how he feels and how he thinks and how he interacts with the people around him. And that personality, that inner child within me, was always speaking when I was writing him. So I just felt it was natural to say that, you know, Icarus is the embodiment of my inner child. I want to say I go as far as the children's inner child too, from what I witnessed and some of the things that I saw and just the reactions they would have in certain situations. So he's a really important character to me, and I just really hope that I can continue telling his story, and really hoping that I can impact the people that need to hear his story, more importantly.
Yeah, I suspect you will continue to do that. I suspect your inner child will continue to come out and be a co-writer with you in terms of anything you do in the future. So thank you for that, Devon.
Of course, yeah.
What lessons in life would you like to pass on to the youth of the world?
I love that question because that is such an easy answer for me. Follow your passion. That is the one thing. If I can say anything before I die, before I leave this earth, that is super important to me, but more so super important to get to the youth of the world is to follow your passion. I waited so long to write this book to get to this point in my life of knowing I know that I have more to give than just a 9-to-5 or just, and not to diminish a 9-to-5 or, you know, diminish coaches or anything, but I knew I had more to give to that. And not only that, something that I wanted to leave on this world. And so knowing that my entire life, but never really having like a vision, an answer, a reason, a why, really messed with me, I guess, throughout my entire youth and even going into my adulthood. And I'm super grateful for the kids coming into my life, because I don't feel if they had not come into my life that the idea of Icarus would not even be born, you know. And it to even think about that now in this moment in my life and how, you know, seeing him behind me, it's mind-boggling. And so I'm super grateful that I got to this point of just asking myself, what is it? What is it? What am I doing? What am I supposed to be here? Why am I here? What is my calling? And just finding my passion, getting back to that, you know, it's just, it's almost like earth-shattering in a good way. It really brings so much new perspective to what we can do as human beings on this world. And so I really hope that I can inspire any children to start early, start now, and to find their passion. What truly makes you happy? What could you do that you feel no one would have to pay you for, but you could do it anyways? Like, that is the kind of passion that I'm speaking to. I could write books all day, every day, and no one would have to pay me for it, because it's what I love to do. And that's what I really, really, really hope people can pull. You know, even if you're not a child, if you're an adult and you're still trying to figure it out and you're trying to find yourself in this world, ask yourself, what is the passion? What are you passionate about? And how can you create that into, you know, your job, your source of income, your whatever, your, you know, hobby? It doesn't even have to be making you money. But I know if you're following your passion and you're doing something that lights you up inside, it'll make everything else around it so much more worth it. So that's my ultimate message.
Andrew, you're right. We're never too young or too old to find our passion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the artwork, did one of your children do the artwork for the book?
Yeah. So, you know, it's based on the artwork. I wish I had the book with me. It's based on the original artwork that they did. Because when we sat down, I was like, right. You know, I wrote all the artwork was to Icarus v. Smicarus before we transitioned it. But when we wrote it, I just, you know, this is the first page. Can you draw a scene for this? Damon, like, I got it. You know, okay, this one, Olivia, I got it. They all stepped in and did it. But with these guys, what we did was we took all of their pictures to the illustrator and just, you know, kind of gave him examples that they gave, but also mature examples. And this was the in-between. So it's a mix of them and the illustrator putting it together, and everyone was happy with the outcome. I love all the character designs.
Well, Damon and the rest of your children are extremely talented. Oh. And the artwork was a collaboration between your children and the illustrator, which is a great microcosm for how community can come together to support each other to make a product that's going to have a lasting impact on those who read it.
Mm-hmm.
My last question for you, Devon, is if our listeners want to contact you, find out about your book, find out about your speaking engagements, what's the best way for them to do that?
Yeah, they can find me on devontaylorauthor.com. I'm pretty much Devon Taylor Author on every platform, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook is Devon Taylor Books and Merchandise, Instagram, Devon Taylor Author. If you guys are on LinkedIn, Devon Taylor, I'm pretty much everywhere as Devon Taylor Author. But yeah, I'm really active on Instagram mostly. I try to keep like the most up to date there. but every platform I try to keep up to date and just keep people informed on what's going on in Devon's world. So yeah, that's how you can find me if you guys are interested in reading the book, or kind of just getting to know me more.
Thank you, Devon. And I'll make sure all of your contact information gets into the program and episode notes. With that, thank you so much for sharing space with me today on the Teaching Journeys podcast. I truly enjoyed our conversation, and hopefully we can have more in the future.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
You're welcome. And with that, that is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.